Osiris.
Back in the early 90s, I don't know if it was my idea, but I think it was the reality that you felt like you needed to choose something or you wouldn't be taken seriously. But I feel like now, a million years later, it's acceptable and almost encouraged to do as many different things as you want, which suits me as a human because I don't know about you, but there's always more stuff that I want to do.
Hi, this is Maggie Rose. You're listening to Salute the Songbird on Osiris Media. Salute the Songbird is a platform for women in music to share their stories and let their voices be heard. And everyone has a seat at the table.
When I'm done with thinking, then I'm done with you. And when I'm done with crying, then I'm done with you. And when I feel so tired.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Salute the Songbird. I'm your host, Maggie Rose, and today we're talking to Lisa Loeb, who of course you know from her hit song Stay and the film Reality Bites. She was the first pop artist to have a number one song without a recording contract. And since that song hit the airwaves in the 90s, she's won a Grammy Award for Best Children's Album, and she just released her 15th studio album, A Simple Trick to Happiness, to stellar reviews from critics and fans. She followed that release with a musical called Together Apart, which she created with 100 of her fellow Brown alums. She's also given us 2 illustrated children's books with music. She's the host of her own weekday SiriusXM show, Stay with Lisa Loeb, on 90s on 9, where she shares firsthand behind-the-scenes accounts about the music and the events of the 90s. She's also an entrepreneur with her own line of iconic eyewear. To say that she's been busy is an understatement. Lisa's always been a trailblazer and an independent artist with many creative projects going on at once. And that's one of the many things we talk about in this episode, balancing the busyness of life with a successful music career. We also talk about how her songwriting has evolved and become more personal, and the pressure we all feel to showcase our lives and produce so much content all the time. Lisa's so smart and fun to listen to, and she brings a great positive energy to the conversation. So I hope you enjoy it. This is Lisa Loeb. And I do. You can't hear it, but I do. You don't seem angry, but I do. Lisa Loeb, welcome to Salute the Songbird. It's so good to see you. I'm such a fan of yours, and the first time I got to meet you personally, we were down in Isla Mujeres in Mexico playing music for the students at the Little Yellow Schoolhouse. And you have so many wonderful children's albums, but it was just such a cool way to meet you after having been a fan of yours for a long time and see you engage with this very enthusiastic group of children with your original children's music, and you had all the adults singing along as well. It was just a fantastic first impression.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It's great to see you too. And I'm such a fan. I've loved hearing what you've been making, you know, ever since I met you down in Mexico in Isla Mujeres. But thank you so much. It's an honor to be here to talk to you. It's nice too, because sometimes as musicians and creative people, and for me as a mom, I don't have as much time to hang out with people as I would like. And so it's a good opportunity to hang out, you know?
Well, and I feel like the world, the pace has accelerated only since we've seen each other. And the great separation, as we call it, with COVID. But you met the moment with COVID so beautifully. You put together this great musical with some of your alums from Brown called Together Apart. And you just released a brand new record, like right before COVID began, and you just pressed on and you brought people together and made art and connected people. And you also raised money for the Actors Fund. And that's sort of a theme with you. You just continue to act and make things happen, and you refuse to be put in one lane.
Does that happen with you though? Like, I know with me, back when I started out I started out when I was a kid writing music, sort of around when I was in college and really right after college. I'd been making music for a really long time. Even in college, my friend Liz and I made a couple of albums and we played concerts and we had a really great following in a few different cities, including New York City. So it was like we were already doing it, but I felt like in the early 90s, I was also an actor, but even in college, usually the roles I would get would be a young child. I looked young and I was young and I was getting the young children role. So music was really working out better for me than the acting part was, even though that was also really important to me. And I think back in the early 90s, I don't know if it was my idea, but I think it was the reality that you felt like you needed to choose something or you wouldn't be taken seriously. But I feel like now, a million years later, it's acceptable and almost encouraged to do as many different things as you want, which suits me as a human because I don't know about you, but there's always more stuff that I want to do. Even when I think about, oh, I'll take a break and I'm like, well, but I have this one idea I just need to do real quick. And it may be a song. It may be a business idea that has nothing to do with music. It may be a trip I want to take. I don't know. But I feel like the way things are now, you really can do a lot of different things.
Yeah, I contradict myself because oftentimes people say, what would be your plan B if you weren't a musician? And my answer is oftentimes there's nothing else I would do, which I think you need to have that level of conviction if we're going to pursue a career in music. However, and this came very apparent to me during COVID, I realized if I didn't embrace the multifaceted aspects of myself, then I would become really desperate at the thought of having my whole identity swallowed up by music. I am so much more than a musician. And that's how we can really show self-love. We can't ignore those other things. You know, this is one of the reasons that I love doing this podcast so much. It's still music related, but you know, I'm connecting with people in a way that I can't necessarily do with a song. It's a long form conversation. And I think we are exposing more of our lives too. More of our life is visible. So I think we want to highlight those other aspects of what makes us like a wholehearted person. And I do think when I was growing up, you weren't serious if you didn't commit solely to one thing. That was just sort of the culture. But it is one thing to have a desire to do many things, but it's quite another to do them well as you're doing them. Like with, you know, multiple companies that you've started with Lisa Loeb Eyewear and with your organic fair trade coffee company that funds the Lisa Camp Foundation.
You know, luckily that is kind of the standard in our business, trying to figure out how you can give back also. So I think it's always important to have some kind of focus on authentically figuring out where you can focus attention on others and help other people. You know, sometimes I think probably you do the same thing where you get a little spread thin because there are so many great causes out there that need help. So you play a lot of concerts, you sing a lot of songs, you make music for different organizations, you do what you can to help however people need. But that is one of my goals, is to continually figure out, is there a way that I can focus even more energy on one particular thing? And that's something that's an ongoing goal of mine. Because also as a musician, sometimes you may get to play a concert that benefits, say, the school where we played down in Mexico. But I also really, really want to just be with the kids at the school. You know, like sometimes you don't get to do hands-on things because sometimes your skills are better used in a larger way by playing a concert or raising money for somebody. But I think especially as somebody who's been doing this for such a long time, I always try to make it part of my regular process to try to find the time to take a step back. Say, what am I doing? What do I really want to do? Does this feel authentic enough? Is there an even deeper connection? Are there things that I shouldn't be doing because things are sort of getting too superficial, you know, and it looks good on a piece of paper, but what's actually happening, you know? Even as a musician, there's so many things within the world of being a musician, you know, being a performer. I love performing. I forgot, like I actually, sometimes when you're a musician, you start getting wrapped up in, am I having hit songs? Am I making a really good living doing this? Are there enough people at my concerts? But there's all these other artistic levels of, am I writing really good songs? Am I challenging myself to write even better? Are there other people I want to collaborate with no matter who hears the music? Performance elements, you know, I work with a voice teacher. I take guitar lessons on and off. Just there's just so many different levels of doing what we do. Are there other instruments we want to learn? You know, is there a whole other direction we want to take? Is there something from our childhood we want to capture, which I've done many, many times in different ways that means something to me. But my brain spins out of control a little, but I think it's important to always, you know, try to take a step back whenever possible and think, what do I want to do?
When's the last time you feel like you had a moment where you had to just step back?
Even recently, I had to step back because my calendar was getting, you know, you look to the future and you're like, oh, it looks like there's a little bit of time there. So you say, sure, I'll play that benefit concert. And yeah, I'll do that event. And I'll play those two concerts out in Colorado. And those things really start layering up. And I do love connecting with people through social media. And I want to explore that world a little bit more because even as a teenager in high school, I had a radio show and I loved to get audience participation. And all of those things take a lot of time if you want to do them authentically in your way. And all of a sudden, when you're tied up with getting to a place, having your hair done, all of a sudden, I get all these things happening at once. Like I'm looking on my door right now. I had to put down little post-it notes with all the projects. And there's 10 huge projects, some of them with sub-projects within them. Like I'm finishing a new album and doing the artwork with it. And I'm working with another band and trying to put together the tour for that band, but also doing my own songwriting, but also hosting a daily radio show and an interview show and recording this one Christmas song and working on these kids' books. It's crazy. And then all of a sudden you realize to be an artist, you need some free time. And at the same time, I am a mom of two kids and I'm in charge of the house and the kids and the schedules and all this. So it's really hard. You know, I'm not sure it's 100% true. I was diagnosed recently within the last handful of years with ADHD as a grown up. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. And whether it's, I think it is ADHD or whether it just looks like ADHD, my mind believes I can just do everything all the time. And then every once in a while, I realize, oh, wait a minute. I got to let the snow globe, like all these ideas kind of fall to the ground. I need to slow it down a little so I can go deeper instead of skittering around.
I love the snow globe analogy.
I heard that somewhere. I didn't make that up, but I think about it all the time because sometimes I'm like, it's almost like a mini meditation moment where you take the moment to just literally like, oh, wait a minute. Like, do I even feel my feet on the ground right now?
Right. And because you've been able to accomplish all these things and manage to tackle lots of projects at once successfully, I'm sure that that is now the new standard for your productivity. And you're just going to want to be more and more prolific. But you also have to police that too, you know, try and float above your body and say, you know, how can I adequately do all of these things?
I know what happens also often as a professional musician, you get album oriented. Or I know when I first started, I was writing a lot of music when I was a kid. And then when I had enough songs to make a record, I would make a record. And then I would have enough songs and I'd make another record. And then you get a record deal or you get sort of business people involved. And then all of a sudden you're making songs, you make a record and then you tour those songs. And then you try to take time off or gather ideas as quickly as possible. And then everything gets kind of tied to a project that you're going to present to someone. Like, do you have the time to make things? Like, what's your process for that? Like, what's your routine around that? And I'm trying to change it myself because luckily now we have the internet. So you can share one song or a part of a song on an Instagram Live. Or I don't know, it's weird living outside of the box of albums. But how do you approach that?
Well, I love having an audience as my litmus test for what material is resonating with them. That's always been, you know, I'm an independent artist, so they are my A&R, my artist in repertoire. I consider the audience to be a huge indicator of what I should put on my records, which is what was so devastating about not being able to tour for a while, because I felt like that was the first time that I was just having to really rely on my instincts. And I had social media to, you know, do all these live streams and play a lot of these songs to my audience with, but it wasn't quite the same. So the process for me is I try to be really precious and in the moment when I'm creating these songs and when I'm in the studio. I love working with a live band and, you know, that collaborative effort. But then once the songs are done, I really feel like I need to just give them away and allow for people to attribute whatever meaning that song might have in their life. And then I find that that's a way to really love what I'm doing. I have my own experience with it, and then the listener has theirs. And you know, if someone says, oh, this is the greatest song I've ever heard, that feels good, but I don't let it like derail me in what I'm doing. The same way I wouldn't let a detractor of my music, I wouldn't let that devastate me either. Because I want to make sustainable music that I can live with and that, you know, I know is going to hopefully make the world a better place slightly in a way that I can. But I also know that it's so much bigger than me. And it goes back to what we were saying in the beginning of our conversation about entertaining all those aspects of who we are and knowing that I put a ton of work and effort into the music, but I also need to take care of my personal life. And if I do that and take care of myself, then I'll be able to be really hardworking and focused on that and move on to the next project and hope that that's an expression of, you know, what's going on in that moment, in that season of my life. But I also want to do everything and I have big ambitions. And then I get mad at the industry and I feel like this is a whole exercise in futility and I have my temper tantrum and then get back on the horse.
I know there is a lot of no. I mean, it's so cliched, but like, I remember hearing this when I was a kid, or you see a lecture or hear somebody talk about the industry and everybody's always saying no, telling you no. People say no all the time. Or you come in with a new album and they're like, well, what else do you have? You're like, you mean the album I literally just spent the last year and a half making?
I also feel that that happens with women specifically, not just musicians, but okay, you just got married. When are you having kids? When's this next thing happening? And I think that the whole world needs to chill out on our expectations of productivity from everybody. I think that it's a big problem and it's taking away so much mystique from a lot of really interesting people who are convincing themselves that they aren't interesting because they don't have a post for every single day.
It's hard too for me because I understand, like, sometimes I wish I was like in the band The Cure or a band that has so much mystery that you would never see, you know, Robert Smith brushing his teeth. You don't want to see that, you know? He's an artist. And in my brain, I know like, wow, the more you show people, the more they'll connect with you. And then they might actually also listen to your music and get connected with the other sort of more quote unquote serious artistic things that you do. But I just don't have the time or the energy. And then it sort of hangs over your head. You're like, oh, I should have done a really cute picture of me making this great pan perdue baked French bread. I should have, you know, and I try to every once in a while. And then I have my husband who's so good at it, you know, like I'll be making this whole meal or this like special cake. And before I know it, he's already like posted it on his Instagram. And I just didn't even have the moment to even think about posting it on my Instagram. And yet maybe I could have, you know, 100 more people listen to a new song had I posted that picture of that cake. So it like, it hangs over my head. It's just this crazy spinning feeling of I'm just never doing good enough.
I think we all need to decide what our boundary is. Like, I would never knock anyone for loving TikTok and being on it and being good at it. I need to know where my limitations are. And like, I'm probably going to need to draw the line there. But I think you do an amazing job with sharing just like your personality and how quirky you are. And there's a line between oversharing or even like love bombing your audience by giving them like really intimate details to force that intimacy versus accessibility, which I think you toe that line very well. And even in your earliest career, with Stay, that music video was accessible in a time
where
everything was so shiny and it was beautiful. And as a young girl watching those videos and comparing them to your video, which is like that continuous shot, I felt like, oh, I can touch that. And that's a person. And that was very engaging to me. So I turn the radio on.
Lover is crying 'cause the other won't stay. Some of us have I like that you mentioned the song Stay. You know, I was really lucky to be friendly with Ethan Hawke, who directed the video. It fell together so well because he is such an artist and an artiste, you know, as a young guy with like a, you know, a t-shirt and messy Levi's cords. And like, he had this vision for a video where it was just going to be one take. And he showed me how, you know, we were going to shoot it. He was like, you know, you'll walk around the camera this way and then I'll pan around this way. And then because his name was attached to it, the record company was willing to let him make the video. And again, like you said, it was so different from everything out there. And I even tried to change the concept slightly because I didn't want to be seen as like, I was protecting my own image because I was like, I am a guitar player and I am a singer-songwriter. I am not like a pop singer. I write my own music. But I did make them shoot us with my band and with me with a guitar. And it ruined the idea. You know, you can't have a one take video if all of a sudden I'm there with my band. Like the one take with me not playing my guitar, which was so weird for me. I never sing without playing guitar unless, you know, I was in some musical or something. But it made me tell the story. And I was wearing a dress that was very me. It was like this Betsy Johnson dress that Betsy Johnson helped me hem it. And we made it really, really, really short. And I was so excited that I got to like work with Betsy Johnson because she was somebody whose clothes I'd been wearing for so long.
And it showed the loneliness of the song.
Oh, yeah. That was like one of the first times collaborating with someone else and really going with their idea. It worked because I can be really stubborn and really like, oh, I know what I want. And it's interesting to try to figure out that balance. It is a little more personal than my normal song might be. I don't usually write from a personal story, which has been a lesson to me as I move along. It seems like people connect to those kind of things more. And so I keep trying to dig in deeper into my own personal feelings instead of trying to be crafty and mysterious. A lot of the music I listened to growing up was more crafty and mysterious, like Led Zeppelin and The Cure and David Bowie. Some of my favorite songs, I have no idea what they're talking about, you know? So that's what I go towards. But as I've matured, I've realized some of my favorite songs that I would like to write are the kind of songs that when you're playing live, people know what you're talking about the first time they hear it. They can connect to it right away. That's a style of songwriting as well as just feeling over and over again, the more personal the connection is, the more people connect with it. And the more I feel like I've done that part of my job as like a songwriter. I still think there's an artisty side that's more abstract, but I know even with my most recent record that came out right before COVID, those songs I kept coming back to like, what's the best way I can say this? Where, you know, what am I actually trying to say? And work with other collaborators that we could talk about, like, what is actually on my mind? What is actually going through me? Because I realized in my day-to-day life, like talking to other parents while I was picking up my kids at school, just those conversations, they meant so much to me and they mean so much to the other parents. And I wanted to have that kind of feeling in the songs, like those kind of things that you think about in the morning, that you think about when you wake up and you take with you through the day. And those aren't always the kind of songs I've always written.
There's some existential themes on A Simple Trick to Happiness, which is such a great title. But that first song, Doesn't It Feel Good, grabs me. I mean, especially when I'm having those moments of like, am I really gonna keep doing this? Is it ever gonna happen? And also, like, it is happening, so I need to snap out of that. But I listen to that song and you can do whatever you want with your life.
Yeah, you can walk away.
We aren't cars on a cable, right?
Hey guys, it's Maggie. I hope you're enjoying my conversation with Lisa. I am so struck with all the irons she has in the fire and her ability to distribute her energy and attention across all of those efforts. It's truly remarkable. And, you know, talking to her, you can just see how her thoughts are bouncing all over the place. And I know that there's more ambition there, and I can't wait to see what she does next. But hopefully, hearing her example of making the cake and regretting not having taken the picture to then share with her fans on Instagram, and kind of, you know, the self-flagellation that we heard from her regarding that one missed opportunity comforted you a little bit, because it did me. I mean, knowing how ambitious she is, and yet she shared that inherent feeling of coming up short, made me not feel as alone. So to all my ambitious people out there, if you can, do it. But please know that we don't need to squeeze every drop out of everything we do in order for it to be a job well done. And some things you just gotta do for yourself. Enjoy that cake. You can have it and eat it too. Back to Lisa.
Even your children's music, there's like a lot of, you know, mental health awareness, exploring your feelings. And as an adult listening to the lyrics of your children's albums, I think you're destigmatizing a lot of the prickliness that we feel with exploring our own emotions. And I think that A Simple Trick to Happiness is kind of like an adult spin on a lot of those themes.
It's an ongoing process, and it's fun to be able to have that opportunity to go at it in all different kinds of ways. I just think it's so important to be able to, I don't know, just be where you are. And if that means telling other people's stories, whatever it is, like using your craft in the best way you can to tell things that resonate, I don't know, to tell stories, which is another reason I collaborate with other people. I have great collaborators on my Simple Trick to Happiness record.
Who did you work with on that record?
K.S. Rhodes, Rosie Golan, who you probably know, who got Michelle Branch to sing on one of the songs, Doesn't It Feel Good, the one you were talking about. Rich Jacks, I co-wrote almost all the songs with. I wrote with Eric Lumiere. I wrote with Scott Effman, who's amazing. It reminded me that writing can be fun. And it's taken me, I mean, still like now, I look back at my childhood and there's so many things that I never asked for help, because I thought you have to white knuckle through this thing and you have to like figure it out. And, you know, I did really well in school, but I was trying so hard. You know, things were so hard. Like the idea of having a tutor never even entered my mind. Like, I think it's so important to ask questions, to get help and a support system, to scaffold your own process so that you can learn to do it on your own. You know, whether it's like learning how to do your own makeup well, or writing a song, or learning an instrument, or producing, or whatever it is, like, there can be a learning curve. It's okay.
Right. I think, well, that's what the ability to not be so precious with my music and your music, like, it also stems from being really comfortable knowing that this is a collaborative effort.
And though, also, I have to say, I really do need to like force myself to write some more songs by myself, because there is a different thing to writing songs by myself. And it could be worse, you know, to be writing songs that you really love with people who are really wonderful to work with, whose ideas blow your mind, and working together and realizing things that you would have said no to in your own writing if you were doing it on your own. But I always have more challenges.
I think that's a very valid challenge. I mean, I know consistently with especially the forthcoming record that I have, all the songs, the seedlings started with me. They had to.
Or
then it's just kind of like uncontrollable once you get into the writing room. But that is kind of an individual part of my process. Like, I need to definitely point the direction of like what I want to say. And that should be a more individual effort, I think.
Yeah, then it sounds more authentic, and it is more authentic.
You are a mother of two kids, and you know, this being a podcast where I talk to women a lot, like, you famously had your children, you know, when you were in your 40s. And you talk about that. I've heard you in interviews be very candid about it, and it's inspiring because it can be a vulnerable thing to talk about. And you know, I think people can get touchy with their own experience. But what was the transformation? I'm sure it was massive when they arrived.
Well, it's interesting because I think having kids now, I have to be much more, I thought I was already pretty organized and I thought I was pretty intentional with my time and my focus. But I think after I had my kids, I started working even more weirdly. I think part of it was having a support system, a babysitter or a nanny and my manager, and realizing time is ticking. I want to do more things. I think I just have become even more focused, even more intentional. It has made me slow down in some ways because you really do need to be home with your kids, and also value things like sitting around as much as being up on stage. And then it comes full circle because then you're like, but also kids, my work, I love my work. I love performing live and I'm actually really good at it and I'm getting better and better at it. And it's just electric and I got to go do it also. So just continuing that balance and that, but wanting to be a good example too for my kids, saying, if you want to do something, you can try to do it. It's not like it'll necessarily happen, but you can try to do it and you have to put yourself into it. I will say also though, when it was in my 30s, I did a reality show and it sort of encapsulated this whole idea of like, I want to get married and have kids. You know, once I did meet my husband and we got married and we had kids, I realized in retrospect, maybe I didn't actually really want to get married and have kids, but what I really wanted was a serious relationship that really was the thing. Now, that being said, once I was married with kids, I was like, I like having kids. Like, I didn't really know anything about kids. It just sounded like what you're supposed to do. It sounds like an easy way to say you want to have a happily ever after, you know? But once I was married, I was like, I didn't even know what having kids is. You know, I didn't even know what that was. It wasn't until I had them. And then you're like, oh my gosh, it's like Christmas every morning. You're like, oh.
This is the first day of my life. I swear I was born right in the doorway. I went out in the rain, suddenly everything changed. They're spreading blankets on the beach. And yours is the first face that I saw. I think I was blind before I met you. Now I don't know where I am, I don't know where I've been, but I know where I want to go.
Back in the day, I was like, I need to get a record deal. Because to me, that meant you're getting paid to do what you like to do, and people care about what you do, and you're going to make music. Well, now, especially with so much independent artist stuff, that's kind of like a really smart way to go. And it was back when I started too. You don't necessarily want a major label deal. You want to be able to have a great support system and financially afford to do creatively what you want to do and need to do to get music to people that you like. But it sounds easy to say, I want to get a record deal, because people know what that means. So it's kind of like that, but like getting married with kids.
There's something validating about both. I mean, getting a record deal to the layperson, you tell them that you have a record deal, they don't ask any more questions about your legitimacy. Yeah. And to some degree, I feel like, you know, as women, we want to have the happy marriage and children because that's a validator as a woman as well. And I feel like a lot of people don't say it like you just said it, though. Like, I don't even know what having kids is. Everyone has to share that feeling. Like, we all have the picture of what that looks like. And then our reality comes to fruition and it's not in line with that conventional picture. But I feel like everyone's got to feel like a fish out of water in this crazy period of their life. And most people probably just don't own up to it.
And also, like, what's the essence underneath it? You know, I wanted true connection with a person who felt the same way about me as I do about them. And we could explore the world together. You know, I want to know more about people and humanity. Like, that's one of the reasons I wanted to be an actor, because you could be all these different people and all these different jobs in all these different places and imagine yourself like, you know, it's like virtual reality or something.
Being locked into a real experience. I mean, that sounds like that's what motivates you in all of these efforts. You said you slowed things down a little bit, but there's no way that the pace of your life could have slowed down after the arrival of your two kids. But I think it's how you became aware of the passage of time and how precious it is. And now you need to divide it further among really important people, but also show them that you're ambitious and you can have balance in your life and working hard is a good thing. So that probably made you savor time more, where I think you can squander it a lot in this day and age with so many distractions.
I definitely thought I had all the time in the world back in my 30s. I don't know what I was thinking. But it's interesting what you said too about it's just perspective. Like on one hand, everything is still so, so important. On the other hand, letting things go a little bit more, not everything is precious. Or on the other hand, maybe, you know, now that the more experience we get, the quicker we are able to move through experiences too. You know,
sure.
Like it's not necessarily that you're being less precious. It's just you're being precious more quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'll do album artwork. I'll be working with people and finally I'll just like, I'll sign off on it. Or making a record with all the details and I'll get to the answer much more quickly. But I think that's also because I'm making decisions more quickly as we go.
That's experience too. Yeah. That's knowing who you are, you need to invest the time in yourself to get to that point where you're able to make those decisions efficiently and execute them and move on and have conviction in doing them.
These sound like a whole another album of songs that we got to make. So we'll have to connect to make some music.
I would love that. I hope I get to see you in person soon. And I like to finish these interviews by asking what you perceive to be the advantage of being a woman in the industry, since we so often focus on, you know, the challenges that it brings.
I think, and I was just talking to somebody about this earlier, we are very detail-oriented as a breed of humans. I don't know what it is, but I think we bring the ability to focus on everything big and small. And I think that's really important for tone and for quality of what we make and how we get it out there and how we connect with other people.
Well, that's a wrap. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Lisa Loeb. You can head over to www.lisaloeb.com and follow Lisa on her social channels at Lisa Loeb for upcoming news on fun projects, new music, and tour dates. And to keep up with me and my music, you can go to maggierosemusic.com and follow me at I Am Maggie Rose. Salute the Songbird is hosted by Maggie Rose, produced by Austin Marshall, Maggie Rose, and Kirsten Cluthy, with editorial assistance from Kip Baggett. Edited and mixed by Justin Thomas. Artwork by Mark Dowd. Music by Maggie Rose, distributed in partnership with Osiris Media. To close out the show, I'm going to leave you with the song This Is My Life from A Simple Trick to Happiness by Lisa Loeb.
Riding on the water line, trying to figure out if I'm above the fall. Maybe I should take some time and practice staring at the wall. I can only see the half that I can see. Then I woke up, didn't know if I had fallen back to sleep. Was I dreaming? Am I dreaming? Is this happening to me? Yeah, I woke up and I noticed all these little things. Someone pinched me. Hey, this is alright. This is my life. Things that I've ignored, hid behind the open door and out of mind. Like a prayer on a post-it note that I forgot I wrote and left behind. I've been waiting on a bell, spinning on the carousel that I can't stop. But I woke. Didn't know if I had fallen back to sleep. Was I dreaming? Am I dreaming? Is this happening to me? Yeah, I woke up and I noticed all these little things. Someone pinched me. This is all right. This is my life. But I woke up, didn't know if I had fallen back to sleep. Was I dreaming? Am I dreaming? Is this happening to me? Yeah, I woke up and I noticed all these little things. Someone pinched me. Hey, this is all right. This is my life. This is my life. This is my life. This is my life.
Osiris.